All right, so picture this. You're walking down the street and suddenly there's a car crash. Maybe a building's on fire, smoke pouring out the windows. Someone's in danger. Would you jump in to help, even if it meant risking your own safety?
That's a great question. It's like a real life moral dilemma, right? What would you do?
Yeah, and what if in trying to help, you know, you get hurt?
That makes it even more complicated.
Who's responsible then?
Yeah.
Like legally, who's on the hook?
That's actually a question that's been debated for, like, centuries, I think.
Really?
Yeah. And it's at the heart of this fascinating legal case we're going to dive into today.
Okay, lay it on me.
It's called Wagner v. International Railway Co.
Wagner v. International Railway. Okay.
And it's all about this thing called rescue liability.
Rescue liability. Okay, now I got to ask, break that down for me and for anyone listening who might not be a lawyer.
Sure, sure.
What's that all about?
Well, rescue liability basically explores when someone can be held, like, legally responsible for harm that happens to a rescuer. So, like, if you try to be a hero and you end up getting hurt, can you sue the person who caused the initial danger?
Oh, that's really interesting. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. In this case, Wagner v. International Railway, it really tackled that question, like, head on.
When was this, by the way?
Oh, way back in 1916.
Wow, 1960. So this is a pretty old case then.
Yeah, yeah. But the judge's ruling, I mean, it sent shockwaves through the legal system. And we're still feeling those shockwaves, like, even today.
Really? So this isn't just some dusty old case. It actually, like, changed how we think about rescue.
Absolutely.
And responsibility.
Oh, yeah. This case is, it's a story. It's got twists and turns. And this judge who made a huge impact on, you know, how we think about responsibility.
Okay, so you've really got me hooked. Tell me more.
Okay, let's set the scene. It's Buffalo, New York, 1916. We've got Arthur Wagner and his cousin Herbert. They're riding on a jam-packed electric railway car. I mean, this thing is crowded.
Uh-oh, I can already sense trouble brewing here.
You got it.
Overcrowded train. What happens next?
So the platform of this train, it was so crowded, people couldn't even reach the aisle. They're basically crammed in, like, near the edge of this open platform. The train is speeding along, hits a sharp curve, and, well, Herbert is thrown right off the train.
Oh, man. What a terrifying situation. So he's just gone.
Yeah, he falls about 25 feet from this elevated track. Now, what happens next is where the details get a little murky. The train comes to a stop, and Arthur, he's desperate to find his cousin, goes out onto the bridge to search for him in the dark.
In the dark. Oh, no.
Yeah. Arthur later claimed that the conductor, like, encouraged him to do this, even followed him with a lantern. But, you know, the conductor denies this whole thing.
Oh, so there's conflicting accounts here.
Exactly. But either way, it's dark. It's dangerous.
And Arthur's out there frantically searching for Herbert. What happened to him?
Sadly, he finds Herbert's hat. But then he loses his footing and he falls himself. And we're talking serious injuries here.
Oh, wow. So first the cousins throw him from the train, then Arthur gets hurt trying to find him. What a terrible, terrible chain of events.
Exactly. And this is where the legal battle starts. Arthur, he sues the railway company, argues that their negligence, like having this open platform on a fast-moving train, it was ultimately responsible for both his cousin falling and his own injuries.
That makes sense. But what did the railway say?
Well, the lower courts, they basically said, tough luck, buddy. You weren't directly ordered to go out there.
Hold on. So you're telling me if someone gets hurt trying to help, even if the danger was partially your fault, you're not responsible.
Well, that's what the lower courts decided.
That just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, and that's what Arthur Wagner thought, too. Luckily, this case, it went all the way to the New York Court of Appeals, and that's where a judge named Benjamin Cardozo stepped in.
Cardozo. Okay, now that's a name I've heard before. Didn't he, like, change everything?
He did. He absolutely did.
Wasn't he, like, kind of a legal legend?
Oh, totally. His decisions, they were known for their reasoning and his insight into human nature.
Yeah.
And in Wagner, he gives us this line that has become, like, iconic in legal circles. He said, danger invites rescue. The cry of distress is the summons to relief.
Wow, that is powerful.
Right. Yeah.
It's like you see someone in need and you just act, you know.
It perfectly captures that split second urge we all have to help when someone's in trouble.
Exactly.
And Cardozo, he argued that it's human nature to respond to danger.
Right.
And it's totally foreseeable that someone would try to rescue a person who's in trouble, in peril.
Makes sense.
He said the railway's negligence toward Herbert, that was the first domino.
Uh-huh.
That led directly to Arthur's injuries, regardless of whether the conductor specifically told him to search or not.
So he's saying you can't just look at, like, the immediate actions, right? But the whole chain reaction.
The whole chain of events, yeah.
That led to the rescue attempt. That's a pretty big deal, right?
Huge. Huge. And the court, they were very clear. It's not just about instant knee-jerk rescues. Even if Arthur took a moment to think things over, it doesn't, like, break the chain.
So it's not just about, like, a pure reflex.
Right. What matters was whether his actions were a reasonable and foreseeable response to the danger. And remember, this danger was created by the railway. This wasn't about a conductor's orders. This was about a broader idea of how any person would react to a dangerous situation.
So that shifts the focus, right, from narrow rules to, like, a bigger picture of human behavior.
Exactly.
And responsibility. It's like saying anyone in Arthur's shoes might have done the same thing.
Exactly. And that shift, that had a monumental impact on legal decisions from that moment on.
I bet. This case wasn't just about, like, one unfortunate incident on a train, was it?
Not at all. Not at all. Think about Good Samaritan laws, the protections we give to first responders. All those instances where we encourage people to step up during emergencies.
Yeah.
Wagner v. International Railway, it created this legal framework that encourages and protects those rescuers.
That's amazing. This is making me rethink how I view, like, those everyday acts of heroism, you know?
Yeah.
Where people put themselves at risk to help others. It's like, this case gave those acts, like, legal weight.
It did. It did. It also makes you think about the ripple effects of negligence, right?
Yeah.
How one person's carelessness can create a whole series of consequences that impact so many others.
So Cardozo's ruling was, it was a real game changer.
Oh, yeah.
But did that instantly make everyone rush to be a hero?
Oh.
I mean, did it mean you could just do anything no matter how risky and expect to be protected?
That's a great question. And the answer is a bit more complicated than a simple yes or no.
Uh-huh.
You see, Wagner established what we now call the rescue doctrine.
Okay.
But it's not a free pass for reckless heroism.
Okay, there are limits.
Courts still have to consider whether a rescuer acted reasonably under the circumstances.
So you can't just, like, jump into a burning building without any thought and expect to sue someone if you trip over a fire hose.
Exactly, exactly. But the key takeaway here is that Wagner shifted the legal focus. Instead of asking, did someone specifically tell you to help?
Right.
It became about, was it reasonable to assume that someone might try to help in this situation? And that, my friend, is a monumental change.
It really is. But I got to ask, if Wagner happened way back in 1916, why are we still talking about it, you know, over 100 years later?
That is an excellent question.
How has this case continued to shape legal thinking in the 21st century?
Well, that's an excellent question, and it's exactly what we'll delve into next. From Good Samaritan laws to the complexities of modern-day rescues, the legacy of Wagner v. International Railway Co. is more relevant than ever.
Okay, so we've established Wagner v. International Railway Co. was like a landmark case, but you mentioned it's still relevant today. Can you give us, like, some concrete examples of how this case from 1916 shapes legal decisions? Like, even now, what kind of impact are we talking about here?
Well, think about it this way. Wagner didn't just settle one dispute. It laid down a principle, like, created the foundation for how we approach rescue liability. That principle, that danger invites rescue, became the bedrock of what we now call the rescue doctrine.
Okay.
And that doctrine, it's been applied to all sorts of modern situations.
So it's not just a historical footnote. This case, like, gave birth to a whole legal concept.
Yeah.
It's like the rule book for how we deal with rescue situations.
Yeah, you got it. And one of the clearest examples of Wagner's impact is the development of Good Samaritan laws. You know, those laws that protect people who voluntarily help out in emergencies.
Oh, yeah. Those are, like, everywhere, right?
Right.
If you see someone having, like, a medical emergency on the street,
right,
and you try to help, but something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Those laws protect you from being sued.
Exactly. And in many ways, Good Samaritan laws are a direct descendant of the principles established in Wagner. They recognize that we want to encourage people to help. We don't want people hesitating to jump in because they're afraid of, like, getting slapped with a lawsuit.
Right.
It's all about promoting that instinct to act, to be a Good Samaritan.
That makes a lot of sense. But didn't you also mention something about, like, professional rescuers? How does Wagner factor into their line of work?
Oh, good point. It's not just about, you know, everyday people helping out on the street. Think about Firefighters, police officers, EMTs, they're constantly putting themselves in harm's way to save others. And there's a legal concept called the firefighter's rule, which is also like deeply rooted in the ideas from Wagner.
Firefighter's rule? Okay, I'm not familiar with that one. What does that entail?
Basically, the firefighter's rule, it limits the liability of property owners when these professional rescuers are injured on the job. So let's say a firefighter gets hurt while responding to a fire at your house. Under this rule, you, as the homeowner, you're less likely to be held responsible for their injuries, even if there was some negligence on your part.
That's interesting. But doesn't that seem kind of unfair to the rescuer? I mean, if they're getting hurt because, say, my house wasn't up to code or something,
right?
Shouldn't I be held responsible for their safety?
That's a valid point, and it's certainly been debated over the years. But the underlying logic, it's similar to Wagner. The idea is that certain risks are inherent in rescue work.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to discourage people from taking on those risks to protect others.
Right.
By limiting the liability of property owners, we're essentially saying, we want you to call for help without worrying that you'll automatically be sued if something bad happens to the rescuer.
I see. So it's about like striking a balance, right?
Exactly.
Between encouraging these rescue efforts, but also protecting the rights of those involved. It's all getting very nuanced now.
It is. And this is where Wagner gets really interesting. It's not just about a black and white answer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It forces us to think about all these shades of gray.
So how does this apply to more like modern situations? You mentioned rideshare drivers earlier. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure. Let's say a rideshare driver is negligent, all right?
Okay.
Causes a car accident. An off-duty nurse, you know, witnessing this crash, stops to provide medical aid but ends up getting injured while helping. Could the rideshare driver be held liable for the nurse's injuries?
That's a really good question. It sounds like a classic Wagner scenario,
yeah,
but with a modern day twist. So what's the answer?
Well, as with many things in the law, the answer isn't always a simple yes or no. Each case is unique, and courts would have to look at the specific facts, right?
Okay.
Was the rideshare driver's negligence the direct cause of the nurse's injuries? Was it reasonable for the nurse to intervene in that way?
Right.
Were there any other contributing factors?
So you're saying there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
That courts have to consider all these different angles, all these nuances.
Exactly.
To figure out if the rescue doctrine actually applies.
Exactly. But even though each case is different, the principles laid down in Wagner, they're still a vital part of that legal analysis. They provide a framework for understanding rescue liability and for weighing the rights and responsibilities of all the parties involved.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see how this one case, dealing with a man falling off a train over 100 years ago, has had this ripple effect across all these different areas of the law.
It has.
It's really changed how we think about rescue, liability, and the obligations we have to each other.
Precisely. And I think that's one of the most important takeaways from our deep dive today. Wagner reminds us that the law isn't just about abstract rules and regulations.
Right.
It's about reflecting and shaping human behavior, understanding our instincts, and ultimately encouraging the best aspects of our nature.
Well said.
Yeah.
But let's be real. Not all rescues are created equal.
Right.
What about those situations where someone does something totally reckless, maybe even foolish, all in the name of rescuing someone? Does Wagner give them a free pass to do whatever they want?
That's an excellent point. And to be absolutely clear, Wagner does not condone reckless heroism. As we've been discussing, the rescue doctrine, it's all about reasonableness. If a rescuer acts in a way that's totally out of proportion to the danger, or if they completely disregard obvious risks, they might not be protected under the law.
So there are limits. It's not a license to be a daredevil.
Right. Right. Let's say you see a cat stuck up in a tree and you decide to climb up after it.
Okay, yeah.
But you lose your grip, you fall, and you break your leg. A court might look at that and say, hold on, that was not a reasonable response.
Yeah.
You put yourself in unnecessary danger. The danger to the cat didn't justify that level of risk.
It's about weighing the risks and the benefits.
Exactly.
Making sure the rescue attempt is, well, reasonable.
Exactly. And that's where things can get really, really complex.
Right, because what's reasonable to one person might seem completely reckless to someone else.
Yeah.
It's all very subjective.
Absolutely. Courts have to consider the specific circumstances. What was the level of danger? What kind of experience and capabilities did the rescuer have?
Right.
And even what might have happened if they hadn't tried to help at all. There are so many factors to consider.
Wow. Judging reasonableness in these cases sounds like a real gray area. What kinds of things do courts look at when, like, making that determination.
Well, that's where things get really fascinating, and that's exactly what we'll delve into next.
Okay, so we're back and talking about how courts actually decide if a rescue attempt was reasonable. You were saying it's not like a simple black and white issue.
Yeah, it's not. There are a lot of gray areas, a lot of factors.
So walk me through it. What are the like specific things that come into play? What are courts really looking for?
Well, as you can imagine, there's no one-size-fits-all answer. Every rescue case is unique. Courts have to carefully analyze all the circumstances to figure out, did the rescuer act reasonably? But, you know, there's some common factors that pop up again and again.
Okay, like what? Give me the rundown.
One of the most important is how imminent the danger was.
Okay.
Like if someone's life is in immediate dire peril, a rescuer might be justified in taking greater risks than if, you know, the situation was less urgent. It's all about understanding the level of the threat and was immediate action really necessary.
So let me see if I've got this right. Rushing into a burning building to save someone trapped inside, that might be considered reasonable, but, you know, chasing down a shoplifter who just stole a candy bar, probably not so much.
That's a perfect example. The severity of the danger, it plays a huge role in figuring out what's a reasonable response.
Makes sense.
Another key factor is the rescuer's capabilities.
Yeah.
Did they have the skills? Did they have the training? Were they equipped to handle that situation?
Right, right.
A trained lifeguard jumping into a riptide to save a swimmer. Very different scenario from someone with zero water rescue experience jumping in.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect someone who can't swim to attempt a water rescue, that's for sure.
Exactly.
But what about those situations where someone just reacts purely on instinct? Like they see someone in trouble and they jump in without, you know, really thinking things through. Does that play into the reasonableness assessment at all?
Absolutely. Courts recognize that, you know, emergencies, they often demand these split-second decisions. You don't always have time to sit down, weigh the pros and cons, right? So they'll look at whether the rescuer had any opportunity to assess the situation, evaluate those risks, maybe even come up with some kind of a plan.
So they cut people some slack if it was a true, like, you know, fight or flight moment.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But even in those cases, the rescuer's actions still have to be somewhat proportionate to the danger, right? Like running into oncoming traffic to save a hat that blew off your head. That's probably not going to be considered reasonable no matter how instinctive that reaction was.
Right. Got to balance that instinct to help with a dose of common sense.
Exactly.
So to recap here, the rescue doctrine aims to protect those people who act reasonably and courageously to help those in need. But it's not a blank check to just be reckless,
yeah.
Right? Courts weigh the circumstances, they weigh the risks, and the rescuer's actions to determine if they actually deserve protection under the law.
Well put. And I think if there's one overarching takeaway from all of this, from Wagner to the rescue doctrine and how it's applied today, it's this. The law recognizes and values that inherent good in wanting to help others.
Yeah.
It encourages us to step up, to be brave, but also to be mindful, you know, mindful of our own safety and the potential repercussions of our actions. It's a balancing act.
It really is a delicate balance.
Yeah.
And that's what makes this whole topic so fascinating, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
It really compels us to think about our own values, our own sense of personal responsibility, and what we would do if faced with one of these split-second decisions. Would we step up? Would we hesitate? How would we balance those risks and the rewards?
Exactly. And I think it really underscores the fact that the law, at its core, it's a reflection of human nature. It's about our impulses, our imperfections, and, yeah, our incredible capacity for courage.
Well, listeners, I think we've officially completed our deep dive into Wagner v. International Railway Co. We've journeyed from a crowded train in 1916 all the way to the complexities of present-day rescue situations. We explored the legal and ethical intricacies of the rescue doctrine and how it continues to shape our world.
And hopefully we've left you with some thought-provoking questions. How does this case change how you think about personal responsibility? Would knowing about this legal precedent make you more or less likely to step in and help someone who needs it? It's something to ponder, for sure.
It really is. Until next time, keep diving deep.